I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
It used to be all about the yellow ties, but now it's simply YouTuber lies. Transfer deadline day is over, but there are plenty of things to talk about. Far too much to fit into a really restrictive intro line. It's Saturday, the 2nd of September. Welcome to Ramble Reacts. I'm Luke Moore.
And I'm
Andy Brassel.
Hello, Andy. How are you today? A Saturday morning show.
Good. I still have my transfer deadline day voice on there, actually. I'll try and take the edge off that as we continue.
I saw you on the telly, actually. You had a pair of very skinny trousers on.
Yeah, but that wasn't on actual deadline day.
And it was part of the
thing is, I didn't know I was going to be standing up at the big screen. And so someone tweeted me afterwards, well, included me in the tweet. It said, when you're doing the transfer show at 6 and recording Back to the Future 3 at 7.
Get a big pair of trainers on as well. That's why
I thought that was excellent. Yeah,
they use a lot of new young people on Sky Sports News around transfers now, as well as yourself. And they asked, what I like about it is, I've got no beef with any of them. A couple of them I've met, and I think they're nice people. So this is not a dig. But what they do with these young people they've got from YouTube and from you know, social media and stuff, is they ask them to do things they're simply not capable of, like get up and walk to the screen and start going through stuff. And it's like, it's really complicated broadcasting, and it's just, why are you making them do that? Anyway, listen, there was a load of transfers that came in. It was a crazy transfer deadline day, and we'll get through some of the transfers that I think are most relevant to our wonderful parish of Ramble listeners. But before we do that, it would be remiss of us not to talk about Luton 1, West Ham 2 last night. Luton huffed and puffed and tried to snaffle out a first win of the season truffle in their first top flight game at Kenilworth Road since 1992. But they came up short. Goals from Gerard Bowen and Kurt Zouma meant West Ham went away with a 2-1 win, as I said, despite Mads Andersen's best efforts in injury time. Which, I mean, Mads Andersen's kind of consolation goal late on was enjoyable, because the commentator, I don't know who it was, I can't remember his
name.
Seb Hutchinson just screamed, a first Premier League goal for the old girl. And it made it sound like he was talking about Mads Andersen like an old grandmother, which I found very enjoyable. But look, Andy, what did you make of the game?
Slightly disorientating, because, of course, part of the huge improvements to Kenilworth Road is that the camera is now on the other side of the pitch, the main broadcast camera.
Yes.
Which
that's
is,
one for the heads, that.
Oh, it's very, very confusing sort of business. As you know, I've had my sightline difficulties with Kenilworth Road in the past anyway, so...
And with your age.
That was another one.
So never dig at your age. I'm sorry. I'll stop them now. I'll stop them now.
I can still... I'm still skinny enough to get in between the houses, but not enough to get the under-18s price. And sadly, not enough to get the over 60... old enough to get the over 65s one either. West Ham always looked completely in control of this, I thought. And, you know, they had a few little bits to ride out, but you just had the feeling with Bowen and Pacatar, they had the best players on the pitch by a mile. I was pleased to see Jared Bowen score because the stuff the Luton fans were singing about his girlfriend was pretty repellent, and I really don't think people should have to put up with that.
No, I agree.
And it was pretty comfortable for West Ham, who looked really like stable and good.
Yeah, I thought the ball from Pacatar for Bowen's goal was sensational. He's an amazing operator. Mm. And the most worrying thing for Luton, I think, in that is that at times it looked like a mismatch, right? And I don't take any particular pleasure in kind of bagging on Luton all the time, because it's an amazing story and I'm pleased that they're in the Premier League. I kind of feel like I flip between being patronising to them and then being overly harsh on them. And I don't really want to do either of those things, but it's very difficult to ignore the evidence that's in front of your eyes. And unfortunately for Luton, the thing that should be frightening for their fans should just be that, you know, yes, Pacatar's a good player. Yes, Bowen's a good player. Yes, James Ward-Prowse is incredible from set pieces. Yes, you know, Antonio's a brilliant lone frontman. But this is the standard, right? It doesn't really get any easier than this. And if you're looking at the start of the season and you earmark a game, they probably were, not really knowing how West Ham were going to start the season, they're probably earmarking a game at home to West Ham on Friday night and going, right, we can get it pumping in here.
Maybe.
We can really go after West Ham. We can get a result. Of course, as Napoleon said, you know, you'd rather be a lucky general than a good one. Rob Edwards isn't a lucky general at the moment because he's come up against West Ham in an amazing bit of form, and they just didn't really look like they were capable. It's not to say they didn't have chances.
No.
Of course, they were able to score late on, but it just felt like a bridge too far.
It felt like a gap, didn't it? I mean,
there's work to do for sure.
Yeah, I mean,
for sure.
I suppose, though, if you're Luton, you take solace from the fact that they're playing a team who are not just much better than them at the moment, but much better than them, period. And they managed to stay in the game. So I think, you know, they've not been humiliated in any of their games so far. They had a little go at Chelsea, and they even had a little go at Brighton for a bit. And you're talking about teams that, these are not the teams that they're expected to compete against. You know, if you get a point here and there, then great. But I think the proof will be when they start playing other sides that were expected to be in the bottom third. You know, that's something that will be different. And you know, obviously, there's always going to be a huge amount of emotion in this. You know, first Premier League home game, even though I suppose factually that's what it is, but first top flight home game for what, 35 years or whatever. It's something that's huge. And for the players, they're acclimatising to being back in their stadium because, as we know, the work on it went right up to the deadline as well. So, look, they'll have better days than this. If there's a day to be worried about Luton, it is not this day, I would say.
Okay. So it's 31 years, I think, since they've been up there.
Right.
Based on what you're saying then is, the next three Premier League games they've got are crucial them because there's a way to Fulham, home to Wolves and a way to Everton, right?
Well, that's, especially those last two, right?
That's big potatoes. That is big potatoes.
And what you were talking about, though, with what everyone's expecting from Luton or not expecting from Luton, all the pressure is on Wolves and Everton for those games. Like, if they drop a point against Luton, people say, right, you're definitely going down then, aren't you?
Yeah, true. Look, I think what we should do is we should, you know, put Luton fans out of their misery and say, look, we're going to move on from that now. It was great to see them under the lights on the old TV. The camera angles and stuff, as you mentioned, are kind of a throwback. They also remind me a bit of Fratton Park, which gives me a nice warm feeling, because there's no chance I'm going to be watching Pompey in the Premier League anytime soon. But
should they have got a bellman on a transfer deadline
always
day?
With the bellman, you lot, every single time. I can't get through an episode.
Well, no, you're such a big fan of him, you know, we just
I told you my favourite story about the John Westwood, the bellman at Pompey, right? I'll just re-up it quickly for the listeners, because obviously on Friday we talked about Tiki Rainbow, so a little throwback is never far away. I was sat quite near John Westwood once, the bellman at Fratton Park, because I couldn't get my regular seat. I can't remember, it was years ago, some kind of reason I couldn't get my regular seat. And at half time, I think it might be the season or two since Portsmouth had been promoted into the Premier League, so they were getting a lot more coverage. Mm. And Johnny Westwood had become this kind of weirdly famous fan, right, as I'm sure you guys remember.
Yeah.
And at half time, the kids were going up to him and asking for his autograph. And it was really, I was really near to one of the kids and his dad, and the kid came running back, and the dad like grabbed him angrily and said, "Next time you want an autograph from a BO smelling pisshead, you come and see your old man, all right?" So anyway, look, I think what we'll do is we'll promise to Luton Town fans listening to this that when Luton finally win a Premier League game, we'll promise we'll cover them. So we'll keep it even. We won't be biased. We're not going to be some kind of a, we're not going to take some kind of agenda against Luton and cover them every time they lose. If they lose every single game this season, that's not on us. But hopefully they won't.
Also, if they're going to play on transfer deadline day, which them and West Ham both of them, I mean, it's sacrilegious. What do they think they're doing? Playing actual football on transfer deadline day.
What's Mick Harford doing in the stand? Go and get the business done, Mick. You're the face of this club. Right, let's move on to deadline day, because it was an absolutely insane day. And I'm always kind of conscious that I don't want to be someone who's like a cheerleader for this whole foul jamboree. But I think when we talk about the Rambles' commitment to the ridiculous transfer fees in football, I think our contribution is fairly minimal. So we've got to cover it. I think we should start with João Palhinha. His move to Bayern Munich collapsed as the 5 p.m. deadline passed in Germany. And of course, because Marcus couldn't be here today for this Ramble Reacts, we simply had to get his reaction to the news, given how worried he was. I mean, he's been up all night every night for about a week, just playing João Palhinha slide tackles in his head, thinking, I wonder if I'm ever going to love again. So we got him to share his thoughts, and here's what he had to say.
Well, who knew that the German transfer window shut at 5 p.m. on the 1st of September 2023? For all those who kindly offered their thoughts and prayers, save them for another day. I won't need them now. I do feel a little sorry for Big João, if I'm honest with you, because he's deserved his move to a bigger team, because he is absolutely brilliant. And they don't come much bigger than Bayern Munich, of course. But for now, I'm just glad that we'll have at least another 5 months of Big JP back at Craven Cottage, maybe even a full season. And most importantly, I'm a little bit less worried about a relegation scrap this season now.
Yeah, fully resplendent with the children in his care coughing in the background. I think you've got to feel for Marcus. I think you've got to be dancing on the streets of Marcus Speller at this news, haven't you?
Yeah, it sounds like one of his sons is perhaps a Bayern fan, choking back the tears there.
Yeah,
as yeah. Their deadline day turned to shambles, really. And just to quickly talk about it from a Bayern perspective, you know, they tried to buy Declan Rice earlier in the transfer window. They said their big things we knew their big things were to sign a world-class defensive midfielder and a world-class centre-forward. They got one of those. And how have they left it this late? Like, honestly, how have they left it this late? You know, Palhinha can't have been a player who they thought of on Wednesday afternoon and thought, oh, yeah, maybe we'll give him a try. And if they did, that says a lot about how shambolically things are run there, which I think puts a bit of a question mark over Harry Kane's ability to win multiple trophies there. But from Fulham's perspective, yeah, Marcus is absolutely right. It's huge for them. And the lack of replacement was why they didn't let him go. When they were signing him, I always felt they were going to sign him to sell him on later. You know, they were getting a good deal. Clearly, when he shone in the Premier League, as everyone who knew him already knew he would be able to do, once he was Premier League proven, they were always going to be able to make a sizable profit. But now, of course, he's joined, Luke, the noble list of players who've worn the shirt of their new in inverted commas club, had the photos, done the interview with the club TV channel, and then it's been all called off. You know, it's Fekir to Liverpool again.
It is. It's going to be featured in a a Instagram account that gets started in about 2030 of transfers that never happened. And he's going to feature in that.
I would love to see that. Because, you know, a similar thing happened to João Moutinho last week. Obviously, he was leaving Wolves. Looked like he was going back to Porto. He actually not only took the photos and did the interview with the club channel, he signed the contract. And Sergio Conceição, the coach, was having a knee operation at the time. And when he came out of hospital, he's like, well, I didn't want to sign him. You won't get any minutes under me, pal. So he ended up ripping it up and he signed for Braga instead.
Going back to Palhinha, as you said, he completed a couple of medicals and all this media, but Fulham blocked the transfer, which I found quite surprising because, you know, in these days of player power and stuff, and Marcus and I have talked and locked horns about this type of thing in the past around Harry Kane. Like, it strikes me as quite surprising that Fulham were able to kind of pull the levers and say, you know, you're not going because we need a replacement and we haven't got one, so it's tough tits. Like, I mean, like normally that doesn't really tend to happen, so fair enough to Fulham for standing their ground. They tried to get, like, apparently, according to reports, they tried to get Scott McTominay, but he rejected the move, which I thought was strange on his part as well, because I think that'd be a great move for him. But anyway, he stays. Palhinha stays in the Premier League. It's great news for Premier League fans because, you know, he's one of the best players in that position in the Premier League. I mean, great. People will talk about Rodri, you know, but aside from him, I mean, it's pretty slim pickings on who's better than old JP. Elsewhere, Fulham have signed Alex Iwobi for £22 million, an astonishing amount of money in my view, but it's a player they've been after for a while. Someone pointed out to me on social media actually that I was overly harsh on Iwobi because he actually contributed 7 Premier League assists last season. So fair enough, I hold my hands up there. Not the first time I've been wrong, won't be the last time, won't be the last time on this show even, I wouldn't have thought. So a quick line on that, Andy, on Iwobi moving to Fulham. Is he Wes Anderson movies? Is he a Wes Anderson movie writ large, or is he actually going to make an impact?
Oh, look, maybe he will. It's difficult for anyone to flourish in an Everton situation, and given their propensity for missing chances, those 7 assists are probably worth about 28, aren't they? So, you know, maybe he should be the leading assist provider in the Premier League once he makes
it to
Fulham.
So he's Luke Kevin De Bruyne. Great. I'm pleased we got that squared away.
Yeah, there we go. I mean, for me, it's disappointing that Lucas Campos didn't make it. He was the one I was really looking forward to seeing the Premier League.
You can't have them all, Andy.
No.
You can't open your presents on Christmas morning and not be grateful.
I mean, that does happen. You've got that to look forward to.
Well, yes, well, you're not welcome at my house on Christmas morning. Let's go a little bit further north. Let's go to Manchester and look at who Man United have signed, because Sergio Reguilón on loan from Spurs is kind of fairly interesting, chiefly because he's been out of favour. He's been away on loan, where I believe he was out of favour as well.
Yes.
But Man United wanted him as cover, I guess, and he's available for selection this weekend. That's kind of fairly interesting. But the one I think's probably much more interesting is the completion of the signing of Fiorentina midfielder Sofyan Amrabat, who it seems to be someone that Erik ten Hag has identified as the solution to their midfield problems, and obviously a player who was desperate to go to Man United and Fiorentina were desperate to sell him. How do we square that circle? Because United really wanted him. He seems to be someone who can make a big contribution, yet Fiorentina wanted rid of him and he really wanted to go. So what's the reason that they were able to get him, and what's the reason that Fiorentina were so keen to get rid?
Well, since he came back from the World Cup, they'd been looking to sell Amrabat for a year plus, and they couldn't find the right deal last summer. Inter and Spurs were really interested, and it looked like he was going to Spurs at one point. But I think the problem was he went to the World Cup and came back and wasn't quite at it, and they were annoyed with him. It took him a while to get back into the team. I think it affected the relationship between club and player over long term. Now, of course, it worked out pretty well in the end because he was good in the back half of the Conference League campaign. He was the best player on the pitch in the final with West Ham. And that's him all over, isn't it? He's a big game player. But they wanted to dump him because they wanted to move on. Now, I think it's difficult because you leave him out because you don't want him to get injured, because you want to sell him. And then it becomes a position that you can't really row back from. So they left him out of training for a while. I wonder if the international break has come at the right time, that they can get him in some sort of fitness, some sort of match fitness, because he had quite a truncated prep for those reasons to the season. But look, I think he'll be great for them. He's definitely got the level for United. I think anything that can steer them away from leaning on Casemiro to the extent they do is a really important thing, because, you know, they're expecting to play 55, 60 matches this season. So that's something that they need to avoid. Reguilón's a funny one, because I think a lot of people look at that, and probably United fans look at that and think that's a bit deflating. But the reality is, you know, they've got two quality left-backs who they haven't given up on, who are just unavailable at the moment. So they can't really go out and sign another, like, you know, A-plus level one, especially when they believe so much in those. It's the most temporary of loans. And the fact is, every Premier League club is in a situation where they've got loads of players that they want to get rid of. I mean, to a certain extent, you've got the Saudi Pro League now, which, as Chelsea have found, is a great dustbin for the players you don't want on massive wages who are impossible.
That's not in their marketing material.
It should be.
Yeah, I agree.
You can have that one for free. Yeah. Well, maybe 10 million tax-free. Anyway, I think the thing there is that, because if the Saudi Pro League don't want to take your players, Premier League clubs are going to have to start dealing with each other more. Because this is something we saw in Italian football going back, you know, 20, 25 years. I think it's shocking to people how many transfers there are between the biggest clubs. But realistically, some of those players on massive wages, only the other biggest clubs can afford them. You know, you need to deal with the clubs that are on your level.
You say that, and an example we've seen of that is Cole Palmer moving from Man City to Chelsea, which I think is a really strange move. He's a great young player, and clearly he's not getting the minutes and all the rest of it. But every time I see Chelsea sign yet another young player for something like 40 million, I feel like Jeff Goldblum in the beginning of Independence Day, where I'm saying, something's going wrong here. Like, everyone needs to listen, because this is not good. And everyone's going, oh, shut up, Jeff. No, you don't know what you're fucking talking about. Mm. It's going to be fine. Before you know it, aliens have blown up the White House. Do you know what I mean? I'm not saying Stamford Bridge is going to be blown up by extraterrestrials in like a fiery inferno, but, you know, it kind of feel like it's not a good thing that's happening, right? So we won't do Cole Palmer, because I think it's kind of there's other things we want to talk about, but there's an example there, isn't there, of that happening. I kind of totally understand your point. Man United have also given Johnny Evans a one-year deal, which I think is a good idea. I think that's a kind of bit of a risk-free no-brainer. They've signed Fenerbahce's Altay Bayındır as well. The big one out of Man United, before we move on, is just, and I want to focus on players that are coming into the Premier League rather than players that are going out for obvious reasons, but just before we move on, Mason Greenwood has got a move. He's moved to Getafe in Spain on loan. An interesting one for all the reasons that everyone knows about already, and if you want to hear our take on the Mason Greenwood situation, you can go back a few episodes and hear it.
It's worth doing so, I think.
The guy who's running things at Getafe was one of the first presidents to come out in criticism of Luis Rubiales.
And El Torres,
He thinks that he's somehow managed to square the circle in his brain and say it's still fine for us to sign Mason Greenwood. A quick line from you on that, Andy, before we move on.
Yeah, I mean, it's quite difficult to stomach, I think it's fair to say, and especially the video that Getafe did on social media of, 15 fans jumping up and down as they learnt the news outside the stadium. I think it could be handled with a bit more class and contrition if it's something that they are going to do. But, you know, when you saw people very disingenuously talking on social media a week or so ago about how Mason Greenwood has been cancelled. Well, his contract hasn't been cancelled. He's been loaned, and he's going to be getting 75k a week. His United fee, which, from what I understand, Getafe are making quite a piecemeal contribution to over the next little while. I mean, am I surprised? No, not massively. I mean, I think you've seen recently with two instances of La Liga clubs promoting in Russian language coverage of La Liga to a market that everyone else has cut ties with.
Yeah, you know, right.
Maybe they just don't give a shit. It is quite depressing, though.
Yeah, I think so. I agree. I think it also smacks of like a non-decision from Man United, just to kind of, let's just
dust
it
under
the carpet for a while and see if it all goes away still, even after all the shit they're coming out with, which I thought was a load of old nonsense. But like, we've done that. I mean, I just wanted to make that kind of reference there, because it is, you know, it's a kind of, if you like, some sort of culmination to the situation we've been talking about.
Hey, Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
This episode of the Football Ramble is sponsored by BetterHelp. Life throws many different challenges at us, and as a result, we all have our own sources of stress. Whether big or small, those stressors can impact our lives in unpredictable ways, and if we don't address them, they can have an outsized and unwanted impact. Therapy is a safe place in which we can address these issues, learn to understand them, and find ways to work through them. Having therapy can be beneficial to anybody, not just people who've experienced major traumas, even if you may have not considered it before. It could be simply a time for you to get things off your chest, a way to learn positive coping skills, or how to set boundaries. Ultimately, it can be whatever you need it to be. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. All you have to do is fill out a brief questionnaire and BetterHelp will match you to a licensed therapist. You can even switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
Hi, I'm Jermaine Defoe, and this is the Football Ramble.
Look, I'll tell you what is a really interesting signing, possibly the most interesting sign of the window for me. I heard you talk about it on Ask OTC yesterday. You unfavourably compared him, I thought, in a very unfair way to Donny van der Beek. Ryan Gravenberch has signed for Liverpool on a 5-year deal. Now, I do want to bring you in on this, but before I do, I just want to give you my take. I think he's a really good player, and I thought when he signed for Bayern Munich, I know you said that Bayern Munich got him perhaps a little bit more early than they thought they would. I was really excited to see what he could do. It seemed like a really, really exciting prospect. And then he found himself, of course, behind Goretzka, Kimmich and Leimer in Bayern Munich's midfield, and he's not really obviously kicked on. He's not really played that much, certainly not played as much as he wanted to. Klopp's been a big admirer of him for a long time, but Liverpool in recent transfer windows, particularly around midfielders, as in traditional midfielders, I'm not talking about the kind of attacking players that they kind of nominally are midfielders on fantasy Premier League, but actually aren't midfielders. I mean, when it comes to actual midfielders, it's not been a brilliant track record recently. I'll give you a couple of examples. Of course, Mataro Endo is kind of, you know, the jury's still out. He only signed for him a few weeks ago. But I mean, players such as, and so I would say the same about McAllister as well, but players such as Artur Melo and Fabio Carvalho, I suppose, is a bit more of an attacking player. But, you know, they've not had an amazing record recently with midfield players. The midfield is a problem for Liverpool because they keep losing them and they can't get good ones in. So what do we think about Gravenberch? I always think of him as a kind of a straight central midfield player who can play a bit more defensively, but you seem to think of him as a much more attacking-minded player who would need to be coached to play more defensively. So what's he going to do for Liverpool? Is it going to be good? Stick your neck on the line. I don't want to hear on one hand this, on the other hand this. Tell me what the fuck's going on.
Well, apart from the fact that you've just outed yourself as listening to the social media clip of OT, Ask OTC rather than the whole thing, which we'll discuss after the show.
Listen, I ain't got time for that shit, right? I created OTC. I passed it on. I moved on. What do you think this is? I've got a 3-month-old son.
I think Gravenberch will be really good for them.
I'm listening to Football Weekly, mate. I haven't got all day. I'm Listen to all those amazing athletic shows. Listen to the new Lineker one.
Thank you. Thank you. Right. I know my place. I know my place. I think he'll be really good for them. I also think it will take time because, as you say, he hasn't played much in the last year. I mean, he's not played a lot of football as a defensive midfielder. I think that's got to be made clear from the start. Yeah, I think he can. And the people around him and the coaches who've had him believe he can be. But like I said, he will need to be coached into that. I don't think there's any doubt about that. Because of the range of passing he's got, I think there's definitely the temptation to play him a little bit further forward as well. You know, I think he can have that box-to-box contribution in the Premier League. But the reason I compared him to Donny van der Beek is because he's a sort of a buy and a victim of circumstance and a victim of timing, really. As I said, the club saw it as an opportunity and bought him. And really, it's an incredible profit. They've more than doubled their money on a player who's played, started three league games for them.
Premier League do to you. That is what Premier League is there for.
It's an incredible business.
We'll help you out. Don't worry about it.
If you can get it. But look, this is very different, say, to the Artur Melo signing because Artur was a panic signing, an opportunity signing. As you say, Gravenberch is someone that Klopp has been interested in for a very long time. So this is a continuity signing.
Liverpool also... This is a story that blew my mind to bits. I mean, I'm interested in Gravenberch. I said it's possibly the most interesting one, and we'll see how it transpires. But a really interesting aspect of the transfer window late on, I thought, was Liverpool reportedly turning down 150 milli from Al Ittihad for Mo Salah, right? And I don't know if this is the case. This could just be... I mean, this is the thing, isn't it? Like, there's such a blur between, you know, reality and fiction here, you know, the thin line between entertainment and war and all that, that, you know, you don't know what's true and what isn't. And there's been reports that Al Ittihad are prepared to bid £200 million for Salah, which obviously, if we put aside the obscenity of the amounts of money on scale, you know, the unbelievable greed that's on display, like, that £200 million bid may or may not materialise, but the £150 million one apparently did. I think, regardless of who he is, I think that's an incredible amount of money to turn down for a player of his age. I mean, I think you could... You know, I know Liverpool, he's popular at Liverpool. He's been amazing, to say the least. He's, you know, arguably the figurehead of what they've achieved under Klopp. But ultimately, you know, everything moves on. Everything... He's not obviously not getting any younger. His contract's not getting any longer, et cetera, et cetera. I was actually quite surprised they didn't want to do business on that, at that amount of money. But did you feel the same?
Partially. I think it's timing. If this is a discussion they have a month ago, then maybe Liverpool can think about it. But the problem is, the sort of level at which you need to replace Mo Salah, it's not a deal you can pull together in like a day and a half. You know, you need a plan for that. And he is a huge part of what they still do. I think as well, Liverpool can afford to play the clock a little bit because he is a player that they know is of such value.
I'm always doing that.
Yeah, I think there's such value of Salah to the Saudi Pro League because, you know, he's the ultimate Arab superstar. So, you know, they'll be prepared to pay the same next year, even if there's like less time on his contract. And dare I say it, when he's 32, getting off the last year of his contract, when they ended up paying Salah more than they wanted to keep him on that last contract. And whereas it might be, not chicken feed, but a relatively small deal for the Saudi Pro League, any Saudi Pro League club who would pay him, three, four times that, it's a big deal to Liverpool. It could give them a great amount of freedom. I agree, moving on, going forward, but next summer. I think with the timescale, they just couldn't afford to do it right now.
I think I've been thinking about it, and I think I know what happened. I think Liverpool did want to accept it, but then Salah said, I am not playing under Nuno. It's as simple as that. I'm not playing under Nuno.
Did he say I'm not playing under Nuno, or did he say I'm not playing next to Karim Benzema, especially if he wants to be the captain?
Well, Liverpool could have said, give us Kante on loan, or give us Benzema on loan, and we'll talk about it. But of course, Saudis aren't in the business of letting players leave, are they? That's just not how it is.
They will be in a month, trust me.
Yeah, well, quite. Let's just round up the transfer thing on Brennan Johnson. Because I think that's a great one for Spurs.
Agreed.
He's moved from Nottingham Forest for £45 million. I like the way Spurs are going about it, I have to say. Daniel Levy is the type of character he is, and we haven't got to go over that because we talked about him to death for years and years and years. So everyone knows what Daniel Levy's all about, right? What I like about Ange Postecoglou is the confidence he shows. I loved how he handled the Kane thing publicly. I thought he was a big pair of shoulders and just kind of took responsibility, said, no, we're a bigger club than that. This is not how it is. No player's bigger than the club, effectively. I think the unconfident thing to do after Kane would have gone, particularly given that, you know, you really, you know, the player they've really got who plays up front for them is Richarlison, who just doesn't score goals. I know he scored in the Cup recently, but he just doesn't really score goals. The unconfident thing to do would be, like, right, we need to find a striker who's going to get us 20 Premier League goals a season, and we need to move heaven and earth to get him in, and we need to do it now. They haven't done that. Agreed. They've gone after a forward who can play slightly wider, but he's a kind of modern forward. He's really dynamic, fast, fits into the way Postecoglou wants to play. Brennan Johnson is not a player who scored an incredible amount of goals at Premier League level, but they're kind of believing in the system, right? They're believing in the process. And I think they kind of understand now that actually it's a fool's errand trying to replace Harry Kane's goals. What we need to do is get a system and a team and a dynamic where everyone can kind of contribute, right?
Exactly. And the whole point is you're not replacing just Harry Kane's goals. If you're trying to replace him as a totem, as a playmaker, like trying to replace a player who has about three, four different functions in the team, it just doesn't work. We've seen like Manchester United partially botch that the first time Cristiano Ronaldo left. Dortmund made a mess of it when Lewandowski left. It's just not possible. So to like back away from doing that, so have plan and process rather than panic, I think is definitely the way to go. I completely agree with you. Also, I think with Spurs, you look at the way that they blew the Gareth Bale money, not very successfully. I mean, obviously they did get like Christian Eriksen in that slush of players that worked out quite well. I'm not saying Munge anymore. I've moved on from that. But I think they've got to be a bit careful about that. And I think they have been careful about that.
Yeah, I think it's a good move. I think he fits perfectly into what they want to do. He's an exciting player. Sad for Nottingham Forest because, of course, you know, he's really been symbolic with their recent success. And he's been fantastic. But they got a good fee. Forest also, I mean, by the way, they've been busy themselves. As per usual, they signed 7 players on deadline day, including Callum Hudson-Odoi from Chelsea and Divock Origi on loan from Milan.
They've had a really quiet like window, generally, hadn't they? And then you go to bed and you wake up and they've signed 5 players.
Yeah, it's great. I've always been quite sort of sympathetic towards Callum Hudson-Odoi, who was like hugely rated. He had that on and off thing with Bayern Munich for ages, and now he's just become a bit of a forgotten man through no real fault of his own that I know of. So it'd be good to see if he can have a restart and kind of turbocharge his career, because I think if he can find that form again, you know, with respect to Nottingham Forest, a club at the level they're at, he could be like sensational for them. Yeah,
but that's the level he's at as well, because he wasn't great for Leverkusen last year. So he's at the moment, it's good that he's got like not a loan but a 3-year contract where he can actually concentrate on knuckling down and fulfilling some of that potential.
Yeah, exactly. All right, so that's the whistle stop tour of transfers on deadline day. Before we move on to the European competitions draw, I just want a quick line on the fact that Andy Carroll has signed for French second tier club Amiens. He'll wear the number 99 for the club, and the reason I wanted to mention it is because it's a lovely little move, and Carroll's a bit of a cult hero here at Ramble Towers. But the reason I wanted to mention the move is because the person who broke that news to me all the way from Japan on his holidays was Pete Donaldson, who just shared a link with me. We just underneath, he just commented, "Lay Smirnoff ice." Which is presumably what Andy Carroll's asking for right now, somewhere in France.
I don't know if you can ask for Metz that far north, but it's funny because they in the presentation video, they showed him going up the stairs to the top of their stadium, and they're quite, as Marcus puts it, they're quite Jurassic Park-esque arena, the Le Corne. And at the top, it plays the music. The music is actually Andy by Lerita Misuko, which is a very famous song in France. I know because he will go through what I went through and people will come up and sing it to him like 3 times a week. And it goes, "Dima oui, Andy." So that's why he gets to the top and he goes, "Je dis oui." So it was a very good video.
Skinny trousers, questionable trainers, appearances on TV, both called Andy. Will both love getting smashed on Smirnoff ice? Will the comparisons never end? But good luck to him, I say. Good luck to him. On the European draw thing that I trailed at the top of the show, we'll start with the Champions League. I mean, Arsenal and Man City have avoided kind of any of the traditional big clubs. I mean, Arsenal's group looks a bit like a...
that's one way of putting it.
Little Europa League tribute group to me. City have got RB Leipzig, I suppose, who they've got some recent history with. But really, the kind of headlines were Manchester United getting Harry Kane's Bayern Munich, as we now have to, you know, contractually obliged to call them.
Yes.
Along with Galatasaray and FC Copenhagen. But Newcastle's the big headline. It's your neck of the woods. It's where you are currently sat as we record this show. They're back in the Champions League for the first time in however long, and they've been joined by PSG, Dortmund and Milan. Now, what normally happens when this kind of thing goes on is that people like me who don't really know anything about European football say, oh, that's a tough one. We suck through our teeth. We say we haven't got the tools in the van and say this is going to cost you. And then the people I like to call the well actually crowd who know about European football come in and start talking about how those teams actually aren't that good anymore. And so don't worry about it. It's just a name. And Newcastle have got nothing to be scared of. I put it to you, Andy Brassel, which of those two things is it for Newcastle?
I would edge towards the latter rather than the former. I think they've got a chance in this group, and they've got a chance of at least having to go for third, because remember, this is, as the last Champions League group stage ever, this is the last chance to finish third and get in the Europa League as well, because it'll all be reformatted next season.
That's the spirit.
As people know. So, Geordie's in Dublin for the Europa League final, anyone? Could be fun. But I think when you look at those, Dortmund, who were really rubbish last night, actually, at home to Heidenheim, in which they didn't win against a team that's never been in the top flight before and had never taken a point before last night. They've got a lot of talent, but look all over the place at the moment. Milan are having a semi-rebuild. And, of course, Ruben Loftus-Cheek and Christian Pulisic have come in. Pulisic has looked quite good early on, but, you know, they're still not a vintage Milan side by any stretch of the imagination. And PSG are moving on from their whole Galacticos thing. I mean, they have Mbappe back. They still have Marquinhos. But, you know, whether Ousmane Dembélé and young Bradley Barcola and Randall Colomwani are going to be the players to take them to the Champions League, that to me seems very, very unlikely. So I think Newcastle have maybe even got the best of both worlds, because you look at the length of time they've been out of the Champions League, I think you want bangers. You want big games that are
about kind of thing. Yeah,
real
that's
real
what
occasions.
Howe said, to be fair.
Yeah, real occasions. At the same time, it's not completely impossible by any stretch of the imagination, I don't think.
I mean, I think also... I mean, we'd all be absolutely delighted to see PSG finish bottom of that group, wouldn't we? It'd be fantastic. Like, you know, we'd obviously be regretful that we're not going to get the old implosion around the quarterfinal stage. But I mean, you know, get it out of the way early, get them out of there. That'd be brilliant. I do think you're right. I think, you know, in the same way that we talked about Luton embracing these massively tough but glamorous fixtures in the Premier League, I think you've got to apply that same logic to Newcastle in the Champions League, right? They're back up there. You know, the fans will, you know, will obviously massively enjoy it, and some of the older fans will remember when they were in the Champions League in the 90s and have some great memories of that, and they're looking to make more memories now, and the less said about how they got there, the better. But we'll move on from that. Europa League, Brighton drew a kind of group of death of their own, I suppose, that Ajax, Marseille and AEK of Athens. I don't know too much about AEK, but I know that Ajax are regularly have a decent standard. And Marseille are a team that are well versed in playing in European competition as well. But when I say group of death on that, you know, the reason I say that is because in the Europa League, it feels to me a bit like if you're a big club, you're kind of really just testing and adapting until you get to around the quarterfinal stage, because
that's true.
You can normally expect to get some decent games, right? Brighton will look at that group and go, okay, that could have been a lot easier, particularly when you look at who, say, West Ham drew. To me, that looks slightly easier to them, but I'm speaking from a position of ignorance here, so maybe you disagree.
No, I don't, and I think...
Look at Liverpool's group, for example, you know?
Yeah, when you compare the Champions League and the Europa League, people talk about the gap between the haves and the have-nots in the Champions League. It's far more pronounced in the Europa League group stage, there's no doubt about that. And I think from... Like, if you're running a Premier League club's ticket office, I think there must be times when you get a Europa League draw and think, shit, how are we going to sell any of these? You know?
Andy, I'd love for you and me to be running the Premier League ticket office. It'd be like that that Bureau de Change sketch back in the day, the Chris Morris thing. I just smell a sitcom there. You and me running the ticket office for a Premier League club, and regularly things just go wrong. Or, as I like to call it, the Emirates Stadium. What about the Conference League? Aston Villa drew AZ Alkmaar, Legia Warsaw, and HSK Zrinjski. I don't know. I literally don't know who HSK Zrinjski even are, mate. So you're going to have to help me with that.
Well, look, I think the point is with Aston Villa, I just feel like I'm going to be repeating myself from West Ham last season. You look at the amount of money they've got, they've got to be winning that competition. And it's a weird thing to say at the start of a competition, right, that's the team that's going to win it. You know, yeah. I know, like, you could get a team dropping out of the Europa League that might cause them a few difficulties. But realistically, Villa are the favourites to win that competition quite comfortably. Going back briefly to Brighton and what we were saying about them, and you can, I think, apply all of those points with Newcastle, in that they're big names, they'll be exciting for the fans, but even more so, Brighton should be winning that group. All those teams have got issues at the moment, and you know, AK like fell well short against, and you may have called them Harry Kane's Bayern Munich, you definitely have to call them Toby Alderweireld's Royal Antwerp.
For sure.
They fell short against them. Marseille gave a 3-year contract to Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang, I'm going to leave that there, and Ajax are the weakest they've been in a number of seasons.
That should be a ban.
Very doable for Brighton.
That should just be a ban. Right, basically, right, you've given a 3-year contract to Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang, you're banned from European competition for the length of that contract. You want him there, you can't play in Europe. It's as simple as that.
I thought it's got to stop. I thought of that recently. I couldn't get
Aubameyang
out of my head when I was watching the Lakers, the fictional Lakers series, Winning Time. And Dr. Jerry Buss gives a 25-year contract to Magic Johnson. everyone in the dressing room's like, my God!
Yeah.
And he's like, yeah, what?
Yeah, but at least Magic Johnson is Magic Johnson.
Yes, at least Magic Johnson is Magic Johnson.
I was kind of, on a personal level, I was kind of a little bit upset not to see Aston Villa draw Klaksvik of the Faroe Islands, who've got like a kind of unremarkable, quite boring group that they'll probably get knocked out of. I'd love to have seen them play against a Fiorentina who are in there, or an Aston Villa, or even an Eintracht Frankfurt, who, of course, have done really well in Europe recently. Sadly, that wasn't to be. I think, look, we can't talk about the teams that are going to drop into that division, that competition, because we just don't know who they are yet.
No.
But with the exception of, you know, the aforementioned teams and probably Club Brugge, it's difficult to see where Villa slip up. But then it's all on them, isn't it? That brings its own pressure. But they should be. I mean, the money on display is absolutely right. The kind of purchasing power, the players they've got, they need to really be going deep, deep, deep in that. I mean, can look what it can
and
do
that's
for
before
a club.
You get
look
to
at West Ham. Exactly. And then whatever you want to think about Aston Villa, you cannot make an argument that Unai Emery is not the best manager in that competition. I mean,
and remember, they've got the player who scored the first ever winning goal in a Europa Conference League final, Nicola Zaniolo. So
there we go.
There you go.
And Zaniolo was kind of a player who was going to go to a super club at one point. I mean, he was well highly rated. I mean, it's amazing to see him.
I mean, at the point where he scored the winner in that final, but anyway.
No.
Hopefully he gets back to that point. You know, he's great to watch when he's on it.
No. In fact, I am disrespecting Villa there. I don't fucking care. I hate it when broadcasters do that. I've no disrespect to so-and-so. I'll disrespect every club. I don't care.
Every disrespect
to... What are they going
to
do? That ain't going to do anything. And on that friendly note, basically me agreeing that I do disrespect every single professional club in football, we're going to wrap up. Thank you for listening to today's Ramble React. It's a little bit longer than we planned, but look, Andy's a windbag. I don't shut up either, so what did you expect? Marcus is back hosting on Monday with Jim Vish and me, and we'll take in all the weekend's action there on that show. Enjoy the weekend's football. Have a great time. Stay safe. Look after yourselves, and I hope you enjoyed the show. If you did, leave us a 5-star review wherever you get your podcasts. I know the Football Ramble's a big show, been around for a long time, but it genuinely does really help us and helps other fans to find us if you leave us a good review wherever you get your podcasts. So do that. It takes about 5 seconds and it really does help us. In the meantime, find us on Twitter, TikTok, Instagram, on YouTube, or at Football Ramble. And remember to subscribe on your podcast app. In the meantime, we'll be back on Monday. We'll see you then. Thank you very much, Andy.
Thank you.
Have a great weekend.
Blind.
The Football Ramble is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Hello, everybody. We interrupt this episode of the Football Ramble to bring you some more Football Ramble in a section brought to you by TNT Sports. This season, you can stream exclusive UEFA Champions League and Premier League football on TNT Sports. In anticipation of the start of a new season, we've been invited to cast our minds forward and share everything we're excited to get back to now the football is upon us. The season's upon us. I'm excited. You're excited, Lukey Moore.
Yeah.
How are you feeling right now?
Two words.
Right at the start.
Two words. Christmas Eve.
Christmas yeah. Eve.
Like every single year, every single summer, no matter how old I get, no matter how much football I've watched in the past, I get the same feeling every single time at the possibility of what's ahead. And because for me, it's not just about who's going to score the most goals, who's going to do this, who's going to do that. It's about the whole thing around it, the whole football kind of artifice.
It's something to look forward to every day.
There's a narrative everywhere. Yeah. There's a subtext everywhere. Yeah.
It's not just a new season. It feels like a new series.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah.
It's like a little bit of, I always think at the end of the season, I was like, wow, it was a long season. I'm not sure how I'm going to be. And then I've got that bit of pickled ginger in my mouth and I've been massively palate cleansed. I've had a, there's aperitifs you get sometimes. I've had a complete palate cleanser and then we're back to the action.
And the football season series, they don't drop them all at once.
No.
You have to wait every week.
Yes.
And that's the beautiful part of it. It's not all given to you in a binge watch.
Imagine if they just gave you all of the season of football in one weekend.
Yeah. Spoilers! Like, come
spoilers.
On!
Yeah.
Everyone's watched it.
Yeah.
I've got one date in my mind that I'm very much looking forward to, and I'm sure you're looking forward to it as well. I think I'm looking forward to it for different reasons.
Right.
It's Newcastle Manchester United on the 2nd of December.
Right.
And that'll be probably the time I eventually leave the family WhatsApp. my mum, my dad will give me pelters and
So it is all about the WhatsApp group action for you, I suppose. You are in a family group and it can get quite competitive between you and your brother.
Yeah, yeah. So my dad is a Liverpool fan, which muddies the waters even further, but weirdly has found an alliance with my brother and they've roped my mum into it, into just mocking Manchester United. So, and also given what Newcastle are on the cusp of, it's quite
daunting.
You haven't
built any alliances. That's the problem.
No, this is what
you've not done. The empire building.
I'm not any good at risk. I've never been good at risk.
Yeah. What have you missed about the football summer break?
I just think it's very much for me meal prep. You know, like how bodybuilders they get this ungodly awful looking chicken. Broccoli and they make meal prep for the rest of the week.
And you're like, just add seasoning.
Put anything on it to make it good. Gravy's not going to kill you, mate.
Yeah.
But I'm very much like, I've got to get my Chinese.
Yeah.
I've got to get my Chinese ready for the match.
So there's a ritual that you can't do in the summer, basically.
Exactly.
The midweek games, there's something very nice. There's almost something poetic about you finish work for the day and you get home. And the timing works really well for me.
Right.
You get your dinner, you get everything sorted, you're ready for the kickoff, and then it takes you through the whole evening.
Yeah.
You haven't got to worry about what you're going to do because you're going to watch the football. It's a great thing.
Mm. So the football's back, Lukey Moore. What rituals will you be going through before the first match of your season?
Everything.
Do you have like a special pair of lucky socks? A hat?
I don't.
One of those really annoying 70s rattles.
I don't wear a hat indoors.
No. Okay.
No. The ritual will be just everything stops because the football's about to start. Get yourself fed. Get your drink and your snacks within arm's reach so you haven't got to leave.
Yeah.
And then off you go. That's basically it.
I think
that is basically it.
For me, Vish, it's all about planning that I'm going to sit down and watch it on the telly. And I'm going to start watching it half an hour before because I want to get all the pre-match stuff. I want to get the team news, stuff like that.
Because you haven't got fatigue about that.
But I never do.
Yeah.
And I always sort of end up getting there like 1 minute after it started. It's just every time. I don't know what's wrong with my brain.
Yeah, I find I try and use the build-up to kick off constructively by doing
lunges,
washing up or whatever.
Right, yeah. get your admin out of the way. Yeah. Shuttle runs up and down the street. Yeah.
Let's do a quick hit session. But I end up sitting down at kickoff and thinking, oh, I'm not up for this.
I can't.
I need to build up now.
Yeah, I can't properly. I get annoyed with myself if I'm not there in time to see the lineups. Right. I can't be doing with not having it. For me, that's a massive part of it. I need to be watching the TV when the teams come out and they show it up on the screen. Mm. Because for me, it's annoying to have to look at my phone to see the lineups I want the games on. So I need to get. So for me, It has to start earlier than kickoff.
So you need previously on Premier League.
Yeah, basically. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Who are the protagonists for this day's drama?
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
I want musical gore montages, and I want them now. Yeah. For crying out loud. Well, thanks guys for letting me get incredibly excited and getting me all excited. And remember, this isn't just sport. This is everything. With TNT Sports, you get exclusive UEFA Champions League and Premier League football, along with the best of rugby, boxing, UFC, WWE, MotoGP, and more. Stream TNT Sports on Discovery Plus or watch TNT Sports channels on BT Sky and Virgin Media. Subscription required. Age 18 plus. T's and C's apply.